Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. This is Michael Rice, and I'm not sure what's happening with Jeannie. We're in two different cities right now. She's in Bristol, Tennessee, and I'm in Theodosia, Missouri, back in Heartland. So I'm not sure. She must be having some technical issues that she's not on the show, but we'll just hold her in a blessing, and then she gets back soon, and we're able to hear her sweet voice. In the meantime, we welcome everybody to the show. We're delighted and honored that you're here to participate with us and to bring these tools, this understanding of first century Aramaic forgiveness to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. That's our work. How are we going to do that? Am I going to stand in front of Dr. Tim? Is he going to stand in front of? Is Michelle? Is Rex? Tony? 7.5 million people? And claim forgiveness? I don't think so. I don't think we've got the requirements for that. But what we do have is the technology. And what we know is that an absolutely awesome ancient physicist named Yeshua, 2,000 years ago, said, a little leaven leavens the whole loaf. He was talking about physics, critical mass. And that all it would take would be a very small core number of people, critical mass of people, who would truly choose to live as the active presence of love and engage in doing whatever it took to remove from one's experience that which is less than love. We invite everybody, when you think forgiveness, to think remove, as opposed to thinking letting somebody off the hook. Inside of you will never change what's going on inside of you. Well, what's going on inside of you could be dampened down and quieted, but it won't remove it. What first century Aramaic forgiveness does is it removes what never belonged. And of course, the question that would be logical is, well, how do you tell what belongs and how do you tell what doesn't? It's very, very simple. Hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. It is the awesome presence of love. Your physiology, my physiology, was designed to incarnate love, to bring love into the world actively, 24/7, 365. If we have a genetic structure that holds something other than that, if we have childhood experiences that hold something other than that, i.e. hostility or fear, then it's going to be easy to find our way into hostility and fear. In fact, the way the world is working at this point is it's become natural. And people think normal, it's become normal and people think natural to live in hostility and fear. After all, look what they did. Aren't they the cause of my hostility and fear? My offering is, if your mind tells you that hostility and fear is your birthright, and that's the way you're supposed to live, then you're in error. And Jeannie had just sent me a text to tell me that she's locked into a reboot on her computer. And
she's on.
She's going to be a couple of minutes before. Oh, is she? How cool. Great.
If she wants to talk, she can.
Oh, okay.
So
well, thank
Dr.
you.
Kim did it. Oh, what a savior.
It's
Dr.
My
Kim,
screen wasn't even showing. My screen wasn't even showing that Michael was on, so it wasn't letting me turn me on or anybody else on. So I had to reboot my computer. But I could hear him, so I knew he was on. But anyway, technology.
And let me just say, Michael, if you're moving, don't move from where you are now, because a couple times while you were talking, it crackled and we lost some key words. So for your last few minutes, it was good.
I was walking through the house, and when I get to the center of the house, you know, we're in an area here in the boonies where our signal isn't very strong, and I have to be near a window in order to get a signal that's really reasonable. And I was walking through the house to get to that place, and so that's where you lost me. My apology. But we're back. So, Jeannie, would you like to open the show and tell us what date it is and all that kind of neat stuff?
Well, welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. This is Thursday, and it's June the 25th, 2015. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. And welcome, Michael, since you're already on there.
Thank you, dear heart. We welcome you, too. And I was
and
just
thank
explaining
you, Dr.
that.
Kim, for jumping in so quickly.
Nothing like a little support from our friends. Thank you, Tim. And so I was just entering into the conversation or carrying forward the conversation that when I'm experiencing some form of hostility or fear, my mind says I'm experiencing it because of what somebody else did. But the truth is, there's only one because for any feeling that we have. And that is because the energy that causes that feeling is inside of us. The world certainly can come along and trigger it for us. We can certainly hide from ourselves and pretend it's not there and pretend and pretend and pretend. And then that special person shows up that triggers all of that in us and gives us the gift. Yes, it is a gift of seeing what we're holding in tissue that doesn't belong. When someone shows us what's holding we're holding in tissue that doesn't belong, and it doesn't feel good, the tendency is to fill our minds with thoughts about them in order to avoid recognizing what I'm doing to myself. And the process of forgiveness is about reaching into those places that are we normally hide from ourselves, bringing them to awareness in the presence of love, and dissolving them. So that there is no because. I live as the active presence of love, since I am the active presence of love. If I lose that to something less than love in me, then I've got work to do. And we're here to support you doing your work. I just finished doing a radio interview with a show in Colorado. I actually don't have the information for getting on it yet, but it's going to be playing on Sunday. I'll get the time and all that sort of neat stuff and let folks know tomorrow what time they'll play if anybody wants to listen. It's called Tributaries Radio. So we had a conversation. It's actually a conversation I've been had going on with this lady for about 20 years. I first was on her show 20 years ago. It's called Tributaries Radio. And so if you just Google Tributaries Radio, you'll find their time and their way to access. They're a broadcast station in I believe it's Boulder. It might be Denver. I'm not sure. And then it's available over the internet in other areas. So, Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anything? Anybody with a hand up in the phone queue? Our calling number, of course, is 646-200-4169. And Dr. Tim, before I ask that question to Jeannie, what's exciting in your world?
Well, I'm just having my usual week of seeing people and helping people with the process. And I got somebody else to watch the Bill Costantino video again last night. She had several reasons why she couldn't view it between sessions, so I just loaded it up and we watched it in the session. And I just want to thank you and thank Bill for that tool. It's a very nice boost to understanding the dynamics of the process and the importance of how, when I choose a goal, it literally determines what I see and hear and feel. It creates my perception or filters my perception. And then to identify the fact that any negative emotion is my alarm system telling me I've either loaded an improper goal for the moment or I'm using the goal improperly, no matter how loving it is, to hide from me the true nature of my upset, then by canceling the goal, I get access to parts of my mind I would never get otherwise. And to have that as an aid for the conscious logical part of my mind so that it can relax a little bit, so I can take it offline, put it on a shelf, so to speak, and ask for another higher level of intelligence, intuition, love, and awareness to guide me to what I really need to be working on is, it's just a very powerful tool. It aids me personally in getting more effectiveness and more power out of the worksheet process. So it isn't that I'm figuring it out logically, but if I have something that can allow my logical mind to create a sense of it's okay for the logical mind to go offline temporarily, to give it a reason to buy into this process and let me do it for a while to see what the results are, to actually play with and experiment with canceling my goal and asking to be shown something from a part of my mind I don't normally get to access. It's just a wonderful tool. So that's my offering for today. I continue to enjoy the video and share it with people and get lovely comments. The other thing that was happening was at the end of the show yesterday, we were talking about the theoretical aspects of once we become enlightened, will we have anger at all? And will we be able to get triggered, et cetera? And the thing that was triggered in my mind was the line Dale Allen Hoffman uses often in his talks. He says, Yeshua's disciples asked him, teacher, can you tell us how the end will come? And Yeshua was reported to have said, oh, have you found the beginning so that now you're looking for the end? And the other thing that comes up often when people want to get into the theoretical discussions in the support group is I honor their curiosity and then I ask, if we had the answer to this question, can you discern how that would make your life different right now, how you would do things differently if we had access to that answer? And so those were two things that there weren't time for me to share at the end of the conversation yesterday, but when we were talking about the role of anger and will anger still be there when I become enlightened, etc. So that's my offering for today. I have not yet found the beginning, so I'm not too worried about the end.
Well, you triggered the brain cells for a passage where one of the scribes wants to test Yeshua and says, how do I inherit eternal life? And he knows the guy's got all the head knowledge. He can spit it out of his mouth, blindfolded, wouldn't need to read it. So he turns the question back to the man. And then after the man answers the question, he doesn't say to him, that's the right answer. He says, you spoke the truth. And then he tells him what question the answer answers. And it's kind of like the finding the end and the beginning. So here's this guy asking about, like, you know, let me be distracted from my life today and let me look off in space somewhere to eternal life. Let me do that. And so Yeshua asks him, well, what's the law say? How does this read? How do you make your structure work so that you achieve that? And the man spits back out of his mouth what's considered to be the first law. That is the first rule on how to make a human mind work. And he says, well, you must love your creator with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and your neighbor as yourself, at least according to the Greeks. In Aramaic, what it says is you must have rachma when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, in order to maintain self. So maintain your human life by understanding how your mind works and how the filters of hostility or fear can knock you out of your own life, can remove the presence of love from you. So after Yeshua says, you spoke the truth, not you had the right answer to your question, because he didn't. He says, you spoke, your answer was truth. But then he tells him the question that his answer answered, and the question was, do this and you shall live. And what I hear him saying in that passage is, sir, you're already dead. What are you talking to me about eternal life for? You got no business in that arena. Get a life first. You've got to learn to live as the active presence of love. You've got to understand how to maintain your human life today before you ever have to be concerned about what's going on somewhere off in eternity. And the average person can find so many distractions, so many things that they don't want to look at, that they don't want to deal with, that they go off on all kinds of hunts and haunts in order to avoid all kinds of interesting things, in order to avoid looking at what's really important and what's really true in their lives today. And so we're here to support people having the tools to fully access 24/7, 365, the truth of who we are, and to live as an actual human being. And when we do, you find that human life fills the space with such bliss and such sweetness that you won't even be concerned about, you won't be thinking about, well, what's going to come after this? Because this one will be so fulfilling and so full and so awesome, there won't be a thought about what comes later. And so that's the I think the much more important aspect of what we're here to support people in is in really integrating that human life and living fully that presence of love, so that 24/7, 365, we're living in the truth of who we are. We're living as this sweet, awesome, active presence of love. And in that space, there's no room for those things that people, who was it, that said most men lead lives of quiet desperation. They go from the desperate city to the desperate country and fill their minds or fill their time with the killing of muskrats and mink, you know, distractions. And there's a poem from Rumi entitled The Real Work that so poignantly speaks of this. And here's a man back in the 13th century who's speaking about exactly what we're talking about now. He's a Sufi mystic. So this is entitled The Real Work. And he says, there is one thing in this world that you must never forget to do. If you forget everything else and not this, there's nothing to worry about. But if you remember everything else and forget this, then you will have done nothing with your life. It is as if a king had sent you into some country to do a task, and you perform 100 other services, but not the one he sent you to do. So human beings come into this world to do a particular work. That work is the purpose, and each is specific to the person. If you don't do it, it's as though a priceless Indian sword were used to slice rotten meat. It's a golden bowl being used to cook turnips when one filing from the bowl could buy 100 suitable pots. It's the knife of the finest tempering, nailed onto a wall to hang things on. You say, but look, I'm using the dagger. It's not lying idle. Do you hear how ludicrous that sounds? For a penny, an iron nail could be bought to serve the purpose. You say, but I spend my energies on lofty enterprises. I study jurisprudence and philosophy and logic and astronomy and medicine and all the rest. But consider why you do those things. They are not branches of yourself. Remember the deep root of your being. And when we remember the deep root of our being, everything changes. And we're here to support you changing whatever's in your life that's less than love. You find yourself in hostility, you find yourself in fear more often than you would wish. The version of that poem that I just read actually was missing a paragraph, I realized, so I just jumped to another site on the web and goes on and says, remember the deep root of your being, the presence of your creator. Give your life to the one who already owns your breath and your moments. If you don't, you will be exactly like the man who takes a precious dagger and hammers it into his kitchen wall for a peg to hold his dipper gourd. You'll be wasting valuable keenness and foolishly ignoring your dignity and your purpose. So what are we really here for? What's your purpose? And if that passage from Rumi makes sense to you, then I would invite you to go to www.whyagain.org. And you may have to scroll down a little bit, but in the middle of the page, there's a bullseye. I'd invite you to click on the bullseye. And when you do, it'll open a series of links. And those links will take you into and through the whole process of forgiveness, the how-to, step by step by step. And so that's what we're here to support you in doing, is to engage in the truth of who you are, to live as the truth of who you are in this awesome active presence of love. That is your birthright. And it's interesting that, you know, the people that are going to most quickly help us to forget our birthright are the people we're closest to. They're the ones who can resonate the parts of us that hold hostility and fear to keep us locked out of the truth of who we are and help us to forget that we're here designed to live as love and to fulfill our purpose. And as you scroll down on that link on the bullseye, you'll find a worksheet where you could just put in, you know, a search, Control-S and search for purpose, and that'll give you a worksheet. And the worksheet's a pretty intuitive process made up of four steps. We invite you to engage in those steps, and as you do, you'll tend to overcome or bypass the brainwash of the culture that, you know, the basic message of the culture is, you know, you're just an accidental chunk of protoplasm. There is no creator. Science has already proven that. You just happen to happen. And so here's your purpose. Go get a job and make money. And when you start to function out of something other than that, and the message of that is so pervasive, it's just unbelievable. Now, there's a quote that I ran across yesterday that our last illustrious president had, and after 9/11, here's one of the things that Mr. Bush had to say. We cannot let terrorists achieve their objective of frightening our nation to the point where people don't shop. I mean, talk about the message coming from the top that your job is to to get money and spend it. It's just amazing. But anyway, we're here to live as the presence of love, and each presence of love has a unique contribution to make to the world. And we're here to support you in making that contribution. So, Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room to
be
aware
of,
or anybody in the phone? Oh, well, let's say hello. Awesome.
First one's area code 517. I think this might be Mr. Rex. My computer's working. Hopefully, it's still acting really funny, so I don't know. I've clicked it on, but sure, unless you're the one that's trying to get on and it won't turn you on. So
are you there, Rex?
I don't think he is. I'm clicking the microphone to turn him on, but his blue silent button is still lit up. So, Tim, I don't know if you still have the switchboard on. Maybe you can flip him on.
There it is.
I enjoy.
Ah, there he is. Hey there, good sir.
I enjoy flipping Rex every chance I get. So thank you.
Yeah. And when he's finished, you can flip him. You can flip him off too.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I said, you know, flipping me on is better than flipping me off, Tim. So thank you.
There
for
you
doing
go.
That. Yes, and pertaining to our conversation and Michael, that was I'm sitting here with bated breath listening to you talk so seriously, and then to say that. What, you know, President Bush evidently had said, I just was laughing voraciously. It was really humorous to me. The irony of where we put our attention and what's important. And also addressing the conversation that we started yesterday at the end of the show, and I fully understand how it could have gone the way you and Michael have been discussing today, which is really good information to share and to speak about, because I'm in full agreement with what you're talking about and what you're saying, and why it may have been resonated that way for you, Tim, and you, Michael, is because of the language I used. I did use theoretical and I did use Yeshua, but the purpose of the question was kind of maybe misunderstood, or I didn't convey it well enough, so I'll give it another shot. And I do have an idea of what I had as an experience with my beautiful granddaughter Shaylee the other day, a couple days ago as well, and I'll share that. But the question was really more designed not so much to what happens when we get there, as much as it was using that as an example to determine if sadness has a purpose. Well, not if it does, but what is the purpose of sadness? And it was more about sadness than it was anger. And it was resonated by the movie that we saw, and they portray that as being an important piece. And I agree that it's the purpose of sadness or any other emotion or feeling other than love is to bring our attention to it, is to wake us up to go, hey, something's amiss or something's happening that we need to pay attention to, and then to be able to reestablish conscious love. The reason I use the example of Yeshua is to exemplify that. I was trying to bring it out that, okay, let's say he arrived there and he had an experience, then maybe he would still have a moment of sadness, an experience of sadness, but it wouldn't be experienced in the way that you or I might from a judgmental place and making it wrong or something along that line. And you did address it yesterday, Michael. And I want to share the experience I had because I think it encapsulates it. I'm beautifully just having a great time with Shaylee. She's 4 months old now, and she is just a bundle of joy. And I'm holding her, and she's so strong for a four-month-old. She's remarkably strong, and I kind of forget that she's only 4 months old because she is moving her. She's just doing a lot of things that is usually saved for older infants. So here we are playing. She's playing on my lap, and I'm holding her by her arms and her forearms and her fingers, and then I'm kind of squeezing around her midsection or her shoulders, and I'm just kind of bouncing her up and down, and I would say push, and then she pushes with her legs and pushes up and then laughs and smiles, and we were just playing, right? Well, because she's so strong, I have an inclination to kind of forget that she's still a little itty-bitty infant, and, you know, still very fragile, although obviously I pay attention to that, but I was just playing with her, and she was muscling and moving around, and so I evidently squeezed her a little too tight, you know, when I lifted her and helped her with the movement and pulled her up into the air above me. And she immediately went, started crying. You know, it was really quick. And what that was it was a signal of discomfort that I was actually, it was inflicting pain upon her, but not from a negative or a positive or anything else. It was just an experience that I was not paying as close attention as I could. And a signal went off, and she went, hey, and I went, oh, honey. And immediately I realized I was squeezing her just a little bit, and I triggered, I don't know exactly how that works in an infant, honestly, but it resonated something with her that just let me know that, hey, that doesn't feel good. You know, that's uncomfortable, or that hurts, or whatever happened for her. And I looked right at her, and she was staring right at me, and it went from this laughing, smiling, to this all of a sudden crying and grimacing. And I looked at her, and I smiled. I said, oh, Opa made a mistake, honey. I apologize. I just squeezed you a little too tight. That's fine. And thank you. And I just smiled, and she immediately, I mean, within a second of me loosening the grip, the message was sent. Message was received, and action was taken, change happened, and she completely went right back to, not right back to, but she started representing that joyous smile again. And I had that experience, and in the moment I was really moved by it, and it just was an affirmation of how easily and quickly I am able to, if I allow it, and I think we all are able to, allow something to just be an experience for what it is, and then move through it and allow it to just pass, and then move into the next moment of experience. And it really, today when I was contemplating my question yesterday, and I wanted to, I was just considering it and thinking about it, and I had that image and that experience came to my mind, and I went, oh, there it is. And whether it be sadness or an experience of pain or an experience of what we might call anger, whatever it might be, her example was so beautiful, an illustration of the potential that we all have to have an experience of what we have labeled as sadness. It's just there as an experience when there's no judgment on it and when there's no plus or minus put to it. It's just an experience. It really didn't appear to be much different than us having a good time bouncing. She was just communicating something to me, and I got it. I responded, and she was fine. And there would be no need for her to make an issue about it, unless, of course, I did something with it. It would have been, oh, I did it wrong by squeezing you too much, or, oh, that was really stupid on my part, or something that I judged, and then there'd be the potential there to add that to that experience for her. So that, I don't know if that expresses more clearly why I had asked the question yesterday. I'll pause.
Oh, I think that's loud and clear, and you know, again, it's a warning system, that's all. It sounds like you got warned, you accepted the warning, and it was over. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people make the warning system their lifestyle, and that's when it becomes problematic.
Yes.
So, yeah, cool. Good question.
Well, yeah, and it really wasn't about whether or not we're going to, you know, if when we get there, we're going to be something different at all.
Right.
I just misrepresented in my question using the word theoretical and such, I'm sure.
No big deal.
So, thank you so much. That was just such a cool example. She has been such a wonderful teacher for me already. I mean, just remarkable.
I'm sure you'll have many lessons to come.
It's just what a wonderful blessing for those of us that have the opportunity to be with young infants. And, you know, she just really exemplifies that joy that is her middle name, you know, Shaylee Joy. And, I've seen how I'll feel off And she wakes up, and I go in the bedroom. You know, Bray is waking up with her, and I get to go in, and I look at her, and I smile at her and get a grin. And then she's looking back at me. She smiles, and those eyes twinkle. And I just feel a washing inside me that I wash whatever was there away. It isn't even important anymore. And I think it's just such a wonderful example for all of us to keep that in the forefront of our mind, no matter what is happening, no matter how hard it appears to be. Nothing's more important than just experiencing life fully as love.
Okay. And that experience is always right there inside of us, just waiting for us to tap into it, bring it to awareness.
Always and ever present. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share.
Cool.
I'll go back on mute,
right,
and then I'll listen to the program, and I love everyone. Thanks.
All right. Have a blessed one. Bye-bye. So, Jeannie, you've got another caller? Have you got your mute button on, sweetie? Hello, Jeannie. Did we lose you?
Yes, we lost Jeannie. She dropped, but we do have a caller, area code 901. And you're in the air.
Thank you. This is Gretchen.
No. Well, hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Experience yesterday that I've never had an experience like that before in my life. And so I just want to give you a brief summary of it and then get some feedback on it. I have been working with my worksheets. I've been working on a family issue.
You're cutting in and out a little bit. Can you get closer to the phone or closer to the window or something?
There we go. Is that better?
That's better.
That's better. Okay, great. I'm a speaker. Anyway, the worksheets on an issue which has surfaced that I realize is I have an issue with people not listening to me. And as I've been doing the worksheets, I've realized it's
What was that you said?
People
what,
not.
What was that you said? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I couldn't help myself.
That was good. I just thought maybe I was cutting out again. Anyway, the issue of, you know, my issues with the IRS, the government, the, you know, other people, such like that, wanting to, anyway, it's an issue of not listening. And I realized that it's a family tradition. My mother's family, when they were mad at somebody, they wouldn't talk to them or listen to them. We would, you know, could visit certain families, but not other families. My grandmother would not listen to my grandfather. My father would cut my mother off in the middle of conversations. You understand my relationship with my son, and we have a similar thing of not listening. And of course, on the worksheets, it says, when in my life have I not done this to someone else, to other people? So I'm working with all of those things. In addition, the other part of this is that when my father was on his deathbed, and I'm not sure if I had told you this, my mother said, he told her he had never loved her. And I realized that is all tied in to not listening, invalidating. If somebody doesn't love somebody, or, you know, what we call love, then you don't validate the person and you don't listen. So all of my worksheets are about this issue. So yesterday, I walked into the Office Depot here in Memphis, and I was speaking to the clerk about exchanging some printer ink. And we had been in the conversation for about 5 minutes, and this woman walked up. And she had a couple binders in her hand, and my perception was that she just wanted to ask a quick question about where something was. And I know when I'm in a store and I just want to know to be pointed in a direction, I'll say, excuse me, can you tell me where this is? So I stepped aside so that she could ask the clerk. Well, the question went on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And then she wanted the clerk to come and explain to her something she didn't understand. Well, I'm observing this, and I'm, you know, aware of my worksheets on listening and such that. I also realized that I had some irritation beginning to surface, kind of to rise up. I was in, my time was limited anyway. And so my decision was I'll just take the product I had and either leave and come back some other time or go to another counter. But I also realized that my motivation on that is irritation. So when I stepped to I had, I said, who was
you're,
there?
You're cutting out again.
Okay.
The last sentence is so I couldn't hear fully.
Okay. I decided, knowing that I had some inner irritation rising, but it was still at a level, was coming up, and my decision was, let me take my product and go get help somewhere else or just leave and come back some other time. So when I stepped forward to pick up the product off the counter, I said to the woman who was talking to the excuse me, ma'am, and the clerk was kind of looking at me like, I'm sorry, you know, I apologize, but I don't know what to do with this situation. The minute I said, excuse me, ma'am, this woman went into a level 1,000 rage.
Really?
And, oh, yes. I was here before you were. You interrupted me. You did it. I never said anything except, excuse me, ma'am. And so as watching it, and she's going off on the fact that she is filled with the Holy Spirit. I'm an effing bitch. And just going on and on.
Ouch.
And on. And I'm sitting,
That sounds like
there.
A Holy Spirit kind of thing.
It did. And I'm standing there, just, now the irritation is gone, because I'm just fascinated by what's going on in front of me. And she keeps going and going, and the clerk is trying to quiet her down. And I realized I needed to remove myself from the situation. And so I just backed up and went down one of the aisles so I was not in her view, and then went around to the printing office where I asked, there was a supervisor, and they said, oh, he's already on his way. I mean, this day, loud, everybody in the store, what was going on here. And so they got her to leave. And then, of course, they were all apologizing to me. And I said, no, this was not about you. When I got ready to leave, I was just going to walk out the door because I think, as you know, I'm not really one that's concerned too much about safety and such. I'm aware of things. But I got this thought that maybe I should have some walk me to the car because I didn't know where she was and I didn't know, you know, I knew that she was in a state of insanity, but wasn't quite sure what was going on. So he walked me to the car, and that was the end of the situation. But as I thought about it later, and this is my question really to all of you, is that I know that, you know, we transfer energy and we trigger people and such like that. I don't believe that the words, excuse me, ma'am, was what triggered her. I'm thinking that maybe the fact that I was what her unconscious or subconscious or whatever it is locked onto.
That
and
last sentence
that,
disappeared. When you expressed what you thought it was that resonated her, that disappeared. Can you repeat that?
Okay. what I think may have, or I'm questioning, may have resonated with her is the irritation that was. All amounts. So my question is it possible that I'm sorry, what I'm doing is my cheek is going against my.
Yeah, your voice is cutting out, but I think I got the question.
Okay, what do you think was it that may have triggered her? Was it the irritation that was rising, even though I didn't vocalize any animosity or anything? And that's my question.
Okay, so let me just take a wild, offhanded guess, because usually power person dynamics play into most things. But let me just ask: did you ever in your life watch your power person for no apparent reason whatsoever fly into a fit of rage, such as this woman did?
It would be, I think, but not to this level. I have never experienced
that level.
Level. I would get yelling and screaming. And then when Christopher was little, I would get triggered, sometimes just by his presence. He'd come home from school, and I would just be in this anger and rage, and I didn't understand because I loved him dearly.
And he didn't have to say a word, right? He didn't have to say, "Excuse me, ma'am."
Right. I didn't say a word. He didn't say a word. He just walked in the door, and I went from having a peaceful morning to going in rage. And the end result was it was a stage in my life where I was under a lot of pressure and such like. And so I made the decision to have him go with my sister for a year because I didn't want to hurt him. Or I wanted to keep him safe, I should say. So,
yes,
but I know that I would get triggered and I could not stop screaming the way my mother could not. But it was never at this level. That was yesterday. So,
well, it sounds like the universe set the whole thing up perfectly. that has you looking at the next level of that issue around your son. And,
right.
You know, notice how that ties in. And if I recall correctly, there were some issues for you as a child when you were sent away and not allowed to be at home.
Right. Although,
so it sounds like that whole thing might kind of tie in here. And I know from what you've been sharing in some of our private conversation that, you're ready to go to the next huge level of the authority issue. And this sounds like it ties right into the authority issue and raging authority and raging in the front of authority. And it sounds like she just gave you the gift of opening that whole file up.
Well, she did. And yet, looking back at the experience, I was completely calm.
Right. You stayed connected. Right.
Observing it.
I hear you.
And blessing her. And, it was, you're not a body, you're free, for you are as the Creator made thee. And with me, you are pure, you are innocent. And that was what was going through my mind as I was listening.
Right.
To this raging. So I felt, powerful for myself. I was able to stay in that state and observe this, but it was like, what was the trigger to it? Was that slight irritation, and can something that seemingly minuscule, however you say that word, connect, trigger somebody else to then give you a gift?
Right. Well, it sounds like it was, the old marriage made in heaven, that she gave you the gift of opening that file, and, it's a manifestation of your work. You didn't have to respond in time, and it sounds like there's a time when you would have, but it did give you a chance to gently open that file to take another look at those dynamics with your son and your mom,
And the other half of the marriage made in heaven is she attracted somebody in who actually held her in a blessing and you know, held the space. And who knows, that may be the first time in her eternal existence that she's had that experience.
Right.
And while her head may not know it, her being knows it.
Okay. All right. So, well, hopefully I've done enough worksheets that it will, maybe the gift will be sent to me again, but I'm having some real interesting insights, and I'll probably call in on another day because I have some other questions, but that one was the one at the top of my mind right now, just seeing how much a very small irritation, or even maybe it wasn't even the irritation, was the trigger for her, and then something, some other dynamics on that.
Well, she sounds like she might have just
to gift me.
Yeah, to gift you and to receive a gift, and it sounds like she had her book of brown stamps already open, ready to give when she got there, so it didn't take much. And, you know, who knows what kind of stresses are going on in somebody's life who flies off like that, you know, what they've experienced from their power person that's the expression they would have. You know, what kind of beatings did they take, what kind of...
Right.
You know, I remember working with one woman who went back, and she would rage pretty regularly, and to the point where, like, she'd close herself in a room and jump up and down and scream and yell and swear and kick and, you know, that sort of thing. And one session, when she went back to being about 10 years of age, the memory surfaced of her father, who was a construction worker, pretty big, muscular guy. And she was fairly trim, fairly thin. And the cat had messed on the floor. And her father told her to clean it up. And she was from a large family, and she came back with a smart comment like, you know, why am I the one who always has to do that? And here this woman goes back to being 10 years of age and remembering how she actually believed at 10 that day her father was going to beat her to death. She really, truly thought that she would die as a result of the beating that she got. It was so brutal. It's like, who knows what people are carrying. And if we can get a critical mass of people who do what you did, who hold the space, who you never know the eternal repercussions of what you did that day. On her, on the other clerks in the store, I mean, you just don't know what kind of change you made. But I'll hold that it was powerful. And here you are speaking to an international audience of people who perhaps have never conceived of such a thing before, and people are going, wow, that's powerful. I could do that. And that's what's going to create that critical mass we were talking about earlier.
And I think that I'm actually... the real issue.
Unfortunately, you're cutting out. I'm only hearing about every third word. Don't know what happened, but your voice is just pretty much disappearing.
Now?
Cell phones, what can you say? I heard now.
Am I here there? Am I there now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. You had mentioned the issue about boarding school, you know, going off to boarding school. I actually enjoyed going off to boarding school. My recollection was I looked forward to it because it got me away from my mother who was yelling.
Right.
And my mother and father, actually my father and mother and father who would argue. And he was the silent frustrator and she was the agitated yeller. And we would wake up in the middle of the night and listen to it. So the boarding school did, but I had been flashing back and looking back on the idea that nobody ever asked me my opinion.
Mm.
They just told
nobody wanted to listen to you.
Right. Nobody wanted to listen.
Right.
They never asked my opinion. And so that's, you know, that's the arena that I'm doing the worksheets, because that's manifesting with the DOJ, the IRS, the courts, the, you know, because
everything
even
you're going
though
through.
I've done well-documented briefs and such, to act all the time is frivolous, frivolous, frivolous.
Right. So, we don't want to listen to you.
Right.
Well, it's interesting,
right,
too, you know, recalling that your parents were missionaries, and here this woman who's going off on this fit of rage announces how she's filled with the Holy Spirit.
Right.
Kind of interesting that ties in. There's a cute story. I actually looked for it, but I couldn't find it. But there's a cute story about a cop who arrests this woman and hauls her into jail. And half an hour later, when they check her out, they let her out. And he apologizes to her, and he said, but, you know, the way that you were flipping off that other driver and raging and screaming at them, and it looked like you were going to get out and beat on them, I figured you must have stole the car, because on the back was a pro-life sticker and a Christian sticker and a follow me to church sticker. So he's like, I figured you must have stolen the car. But anyway.
Touche.
Touche. And, you know, to recognize that, you know, we're all born and bred with whatever the genetics of our family system is and all of those things,
right,
that need to be embraced. Instead of, you know, when we give people the command, love your neighbor, and don't teach them that it's about being the space of love in your own skin when you are in the front of anybody that you think about, or even to think about them, when we teach them that we're supposed to give them something called love when they're being, you know, insane and bizarre, we set people up for failure, because if we have that hostility or fear in us, it's going to resonate and it's going to come up. Instead of telling people to love your neighbor, we should be telling people, oh, if your neighbor brings up something less than loving you, apply forgiveness first and then stand in that space of blessing, that space of being. And that's the real meaning. You know, to go back to the Aramaic, it was have rachma for your neighbor. You maintain that opening in yourself for love to be present instead of, you know, puking whatever's coming up in you on them. And it just becomes, when you see it from the Aramaic, it just becomes so practical and workable. You know, if you looked at that situation, you know, if you'd have been standing in that store 20 years ago and that had happened, what would have been the scenario like in your mind compared to, oh, I stood in a blessing and I could observe what was happening. Powerful shift.
Because tension was beginning to rise, and I knew it was coming up. The thought passed through my mind, excuse me, ma'am, but I was here. You know, you interrupted me.
Right.
Ma'am, but the energy was there in my mind. And so I'm thinking that maybe she was already feeling where that she had interrupted. And
good chance.
And had maybe some guilt about it. Even though I didn't say the words, I think if I were really honest with me, I was thinking it.
Right.
And
she
so that, it. You know, that may have connected with that and whatever her issues were. But I was
silent trigger.
That I was able to react the way I did. So it shows that I may. All right.
Definitely making progress. All right. Well, we're down to the last few seconds, so we're going to just have to close the show out and just say thank you to everybody who chooses to join us. And we're here as a space of support for this process of healing ourselves, each other, and the planet. And we invite you to have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's a great gift to give the world. Bring a stranger tomorrow. Bye-bye.